Today's Institute for Healthcare Improvement program is titled Case Study with Measurement and Feedback. And at this time, it's my pleasure to introduce your IHI moderator for today, Ms. Marie Schall. Marie is the Director of Office Practices and Outpatient Settings Domain of the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's Impact Network. Marie, welcome to the program.
Kurt, thank you very much. And welcome, everyone, again to our series of calls on spreading improvements in healthcare. This is our final call. And as you may recall from our previous ones, just to set the context for today's call, on our previous calls, we have had discussion about some general concepts and introduced a framework that identifies some key components for successful spread. And then we've focused on each individual call that we've had has highlighted a number of those components, including leadership and setup, communications, and last week the discussion on knowledge transfer and knowledge management. So today's call will be bringing actually everything together in the framework. We'll be discussing two case studies as well as focusing on the particular component of measurement and feedback. I'd like to introduce the speakers in the order that they will be addressing you today on the call. So first, let me introduce Kevin Nolan, a statistician and consultant with Associates in Process Improvement and a senior fellow with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. Kevin has focused on developing methods and helping organizations both within and outside of healthcare accelerate their rate of improvement. He has served on the faculty of IHI's Breakthrough Series Collaboratives and Large Systems Spread Projects. He is the co-author of The Improvement Guide. Gail Nielsen is the Patient Safety Administrator for Iowa Health System. I'm sorry, actually, John Whittington is going to come next, so let me introduce John. John Whittington, the Coordinator of Clinical Effectiveness, Clinical Informatics, and Patient Safety Administrator with OSF Healthcare. And John is also a safety scholar with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. And now Gail, who is with Iowa Health System, is the Patient Safety Administrator there. And in this position, she is responsible for a 10-hospital collaborative patient safety improvement effort that is changing culture to improve patient safety and spreading successful interventions across system hospitals. In addition, she is the systems improvement coach for the Iowa Health System's collaboration efforts in conjunction with the Impact Network, the office practice and outpatient settings collaborative, and serves as a collaborative director for patient safety. Gail is also a safety scholar and faculty of the Institute for Healthcare Improvement and project manager for IHI's Quantum Leaps Community on Falls. So that's our faculty for today, so I'll turn things over to Kevin Nolan.
Thanks, Marie, and welcome, everyone. I'd just like to take a few minutes to set the context for the call today before I turn it over to John and Gail. Everett Rogers, who we've heard his name a lot over the last number of weeks, talks about three important groups that are involved in most spread efforts. The first is the change agency. This is the group that actually sets the agenda for change, the Veterans Administration, the Centers for Medicare, Medicaid Services, the leaders of a particular health system, and so forth. The next group is the adopters. That's the group that actually makes the changes, the target population for your spread efforts. The third group, and Rogers refers to these as change agents and attributes a fair amount of importance to their role of actually influencing the adopter's decision and the direction desired by the change agency. From our review of the list of participants on this call series and listening to the discussion over the last several weeks, our sense is that although some people on the call might represent the change agency or might have been in the role of adopters at some point, most of us, I believe, play the role of change agents. Today, I think we have two of our own on this call. Both John and Gail, over the last few years, have been on the ground in the midst of spread efforts. And today they will share their experience and lessons they have learned to achieve the three objectives that are at the bottom of page one of the handouts. The objectives of this session are really to apply the lessons from two studies of spread, John and Gail's, and to talk about a couple of different things. To get started, how you might get started on a spread project from their learning, keeping that project moving, And then finally, how you can get a feedback system, design a measurement and feedback system strategy to guide spread in your particular organization. These three objectives really match the three interconnected phases that are represented on the framework for spread that is in the top of page 2. Marie introduced this framework earlier in the call series. Dr. Jim Schlosser showed an earlier version when he spoke that guided the work that he was involved in as a change agent in the Veterans Health Administration. We believe this framework, which is based on theory and experience, can be useful for change agents as they set strategy and as they try to lead their spread efforts. So let me just take a few minutes to connect what we've heard, I think, over this conference series to this particular framework. Getting started, which is our first topic that we'll talk about, is really organizing the initiative. How do you get started on a spread initiative? And that contains the components in the framework of leadership, better ideas, and setup. We have heard from our speakers about the importance of a spread initiative being strategic for the organization. Dr. Amafa on the call on leadership actually shared with us an assessment for readiness for spread that included a particular question, which was, are the changes planned included in the organization's strategic objective? If they're not, he talked about the need of a change agent, us, to raise that issue early on to an executive sponsor before we get too far into the project. But just because an initiative is strategic does not mean that the changes should be mandated. Andy Vandeven talked about that mandated changes in most cases don't get adopted because adopters can't internalize them. And he agrees, I believe, with Tom Gilmore that change agents need to create a pull for their changes. Tom talked about taking a campaign approach. He talked about that starts with evidence that the changes really are better ideas from the framework. Is it a moral idea? Are patients better off because of the changes you will make? Do the ideas result in practices that are enormously convenient for the adopters? Do they give the adopters more control? Similarly, Andy mentioned the characteristics of an innovation from Rogers, starting with relative advantage for all of the adopter audience. Another attribute of Rogers is that the ideas are easy for all the adopter audiences to adopt. They're not complex. So how we package what we are trying to spread is important. I think I've learned that too often complicated technical content is pushed on adopters who have not connected with those ideas or cannot readily try them out. It is hard for them to make the decision to change. So I think as change agents, it is our obligation, and John and Gail will talk about this, how we can get people to connect to those ideas and make that decision to adopt. Part of setting up the project is looking for successful sites, found pilots, in Tom Gilmore's words. These are your facts on the ground that reduce the risk. Use the emotions of these early adopters to make the work observable and to stir the emotions of others. John, in a few minutes, will share some of his experiences on the ground in this idea of getting started. And talked about, we'll try to break there to hear your comments and what you've learned and ask questions and share your thoughts. We'll then move on to Gail. Gail will talk about keeping the project moving and using feedback to monitor the spread initiative. Keeping the project moving relies on continuing to strengthen and assess the social system, which is shown in the framework. Change agents need to create pull for their initiatives, but they also must create, as Nancy Dixon spoke so eloquently about last week, opportunities for knowledge transfer among the adopters. This is represented by the dotted lines connecting the circles in the framework. This allows people to actually get to action, not just to make the decision, but to get to action and actually make the changes to improve the system. Nancy talked about how the change agents, us, should serve as listeners in the system to understand the issues and connectors to facilitate this exchange of knowledge to resolve those issues. This exchange of knowledge needs to have a peer-to-peer component so the how-tos of the ideas can be exchanged. Nancy talked about that tacit knowledge that needs to be exchanged peer-to-peer, which is the knowledge in people's heads. Change agents must also, as many of our speakers mentioned, allow adopters the opportunity to adapt or reinvent the changes to their local situation and arrange for the time and the needed support for the adopters to do that. Gail will also talk about the feedback system that she's established at Iowa Health System to monitor her and Iowa's spread efforts. I hope this framework for spread has allowed you to place a place to hang these theory and ideas that we've heard from our previous speakers. Remember, John and Gail, as I said, are one of us. They have been successful, as many of you have, but they have certainly dealt with the many frustrations as you have also. We can learn a lot from each other. I'd like to turn it over now to John to start by sharing his experience as a change agent in the first phase of the framework, getting started. John?
Thanks, Kevin. One thing I'd like everyone to do is keep handy the framework for spread. As I talk about things, I want you to be thinking about these things, critiquing what I'm saying, he's blowing it here, he should have done this there. But I want you to be thinking about it. There is no perfect model for anything in the world. However, I want to say that I think a framework for spread is a good model, and I think as we apply that model and as we have in our organization, I think there's a real benefit to it. A couple things I want to say before I actually get into the slides and talk a little bit more. One thing that I always say is all change is local. Just so you want to know what I do for a living, and Gail does the same thing, what we do is we work for large corporations, which I'll talk about here in a moment, and our job is to tell people, let's go east. And we give them a direction, we hold them accountable, we provide them resources to accomplish their goal, but we don't tell them how fast east is, how fast they're going to have to get east. Some might go in a wagon train, some go in jets, but they're all having to move in a certain direction. So that's really critical as we think about how you spread ideas and how you spread particular changes. As we look at that slide about OSF, I want to make a few more comments too. First of all, I always like to say it all looks better in PDF for PowerPoint. This is a messy situation that we're going to be in. It never goes as smooth as you expect. You're going to hit a lot of roadblocks along the way. You just have to recognize that. And I want to describe both successes and some temporary failures to show you how I blew it here on a recent project we've been working on and some corrective actions. There may be more learning in that than there is in some of our successes. And, I want to give real-life examples. It's great to hear theory, and I'm all for theory because theory gives you a vision for where you need to go, but I want to give real-life examples. And if I haven't done it well enough, please feel free to ask questions. I think between Gail, myself, and Kevin, we have plenty of experience about real-life examples, and that's where I want us to get to today. I think, too, that you need to recognize that testing, implementing, and spread, although they are distinct disciplines, merge and blend to each other as you're working on one of these projects. And then I think something you have to recognize, if you really do a big project well, and we're going to be talking some about patient safety here, but if you really do a big project well, there's a real big bonus that comes in, and that is your organization transforms. You take an organization, particularly like ours, and you begin to help it be a learning organization, and hopefully I'll allude to that a little bit. Just to say, who is OSF? OSF stands for, first of all, what does it stand for? It stands for the Order of St. Francis. We're a Catholic healthcare system in the state of Illinois. We cover a large part of the state of Illinois, but not Cook County or the Chicago areas. And you can see the numbers about us. The project that we're going to talk about today that we've been working on is patient safety, and specifically it started out with medication safety. And so our initial, the results that we've been able to achieve as a corporate measure, we've gone from ADEs of 4 to approximately 1.2. Let me go to the next slide and start talking about example of spread. And Gail and I actually worked on the same project together in our respective systems, and we collaborate between each other. In the project, so I'm going to set up just briefly the project we're working on, the project we're talking about here. In this project, we had a clear aim, and it was the idealized design of the medication system to make the system safer by a factor of 10 and more cost-effective. So in 2001, we launched this project, and there were key ideas that we had to spread. So we talk about this concretely. There were really four major categories that these ideas fall in. The first idea for safety is we're going to focus on culture. taking our culture from a blame and shame to a more open culture, basically to a just culture, to a culture that looks at the problems and is able to give feedback and improvement in it. And so two ideas that we worked on for culture change. One is this concept called executive walkarounds. And all that means is the executives go around to the facilities, to their hospital, and ask a couple questions. Have you seen any safety issues? Have you seen any near misses? Have you seen any particular problems? It shows the staff that they're interested. They get feedback. That feedback then is turned into action. And we let the staff know that we've responded to their ideas when we can. So that was one cultural transformation idea. The second idea is this concept called unit briefings. And unit briefings are really just safety meetings within a particular area. It's basically getting together for 5 minutes and talking about safety issues that people might be facing. Maybe there's two patients with the same name on the floor. Maybe there's pumps that they've been having problems with. It just talks about the local safety issues and then also gives people an opportunity to express maybe some other safety concerns they have. The bolts on the toilet risers aren't fitting well, and we're afraid somebody might slip off. Simple things, but it gives people an opportunity to communicate. That's culture. The next thing we worked on is the concept of reconciliation, which is simply information handoffs at points of transition. So we focused on a concept called medication reconciliation, and what that was is we want to know the patient's medications when they come into the hospital. We want to order off of those medications at admission. We want to order off of those medications at transfer, and we want to do it at discharge. It turns out when we study this process that you only get it right about 60% of the time until you actually develop a process to improve it. Then we worked on the third major area, to work on the medication system, the ordering and dispensing of medications. And specifically, we worked on the dispensing side of medications, and we used a technique called failure modes and effects analysis. And basically, we analyzed where could the system fail, how could it fail, and what could we do to strengthen the system. And then we worked on high-hazard medications, high-risk medications like insulin, narcotics, sedation, anticoagulation, or areas like pumps. We focused on improving those areas. Key to all of this was a measurement strategy, and we had a measurement strategy, and all this comes from the IHI. We had a measurement strategy of how to measure adverse drug events. And then lastly, I put down here this concept called crew resource management. It wasn't in our first wave of safety ideas. It comes later in it, but I'm going to talk about that to show you how I failed or it's a temporary setback and the corrective actions I'm taking. So everything above is, I'd say, somewhat successful, and there is some success in crew resource management, but not to the point that I'd like, and I'll show you the reasons why. Getting started on a spread project. You know, you've heard this before, but this is a critical factor, and leadership. In fact, it's so critical that on these large-scale projects, unless you have some organizational alignment, unless you have leadership on board, at the point where you want to spread this, you could maybe do a small pilot, just to experiment. But once you really want to get the organization moving forward, unless leadership is really on board, and you can work to get them on board, but unless they're truly on board, don't go there. Don't waste your time. You're not going to be successful in any kind of large-scale organization. Leadership has certain responsibilities then. Once they're on board, they have certain responsibilities. One is they need to communicate the theme. So what the heck does that mean? Well, in our organization, we're 6 hospitals, and we have a CEO. We have a corporate office, and that's where I work, at the corporate office. And our CEO has been faithful in communicating that safety is a strong issue for us. And even through hard financial times, he's communicated that. And I've seen our hospital CEOs stick with that too, even in tougher financial times. And that has to be a consistent message on whatever project you're doing. Otherwise, again, don't go there. So he's communicated that. And then at the local level, at each hospital level, you have your executives in the safety world who are actually doing these executive walkarounds, that people actually see our executives out there in the field walking around asking questions about safety questions. And even from the corporate organization, even our president has visited, is starting to visit the hospitals to go on executive walkarounds, to be right there in the front line, to hear the problems and issues that people have. So the executives are visible, and they're communicating. good news is that sometimes you can use outside forces to help get executive alignment, too. So, for instance, when this project starts, it starts in the year 2001. And so you've got Jayco pushing with a new safety initiative, talking about having patient safety officers, developing safety plans. You've got LeapFrog out there talking about issues. You've got National Quality Forum talking about issues. You've got the newspaper talking about safety issues. You have a variety of things that are helping use that, helping your organization to move forward. And you need to use that. You need to use everything in your power if you feel strongly about the project to help drive the project and help continue to not only keep leadership involved, but keep them understanding why they need to be involved. Leadership needs to remove roadblocks. So let me just talk about a roadblock. I told you I wanted to share warts and all today, so let me just talk about one of our facilities, one of our hospitals, and they were doing an excellent job in patient safety. I had zealots who were patient safety, who were strongly involved in patient safety, and they actually sat in the quality improvement department. And they're nurses by training also, and they were out there pushing these safety ideas right and left. Only one problem. The nursing executives really weren't on board. They really hadn't gotten included well enough. And so at one hospital, it came almost to the point of civil war. Now, the good news is that we did have a COO who was the administrator involved with the patient safety project, and he was not oblivious. He saw the problem, but he had the wisdom to let them sort of duke it out, fight it out, work through the situation, so that eventually in that organization, both the safety zealots and the nursing department are fully on board. And in fact, the beauty of that, working through those roadblocks, is that now nursing are zealots on pushing patient safety because they didn't have it all thrust upon them. They became part of it, and it made a huge difference. But the key to that was having leadership that could see the problem and help them work through the problem. And that's what he actually did. He actually let them work through the problem. And I think that was great. You need to create alignment. In that you need to make this a clear priority throughout the organization, whatever this something is that you're working on. But again, you don't want to work on one of these projects unless you have some clear alignment, unless you have people working on it. So in our organization, at that time we were using a balanced scorecard measure at the corporate level. And at the facility level, they would use a balanced scorecard measure. And at the department level, they would have certain indicators or measures. And there would be some alignment throughout all of this. And that was a big help in terms of keeping people aligned at the local level. The setup for this, some things to consider early on is who are the key stakeholders for the project. So I already told you, in the one institution, although we had our patient safety zealots, there were other key stakeholders, nursing executives, physicians. We might not have always had those on board. And that one, again, they had civil war because they really hadn't done that legwork to keep people informed, to let them know their responsibilities and what opportunities that they would have. Who will sustain the spread? The deal on that is that when you work through ideas, it is nothing at all to take a project, okay, take something like reconciliation that we worked on, and make it happen in your organization. I mean, it takes time, so don't get me wrong on that. But as you work through it, you can get the project done. But how do you sustain projects? How do you make them last longer? One of the ways you sustain projects is with accountability. You have to have someone who is accountable for the sustaining of the spread to keep it in place. And the reconciliation, I'll give you a specific example. It came down to the floor manager, the nursing manager, that she was responsible to maintain the level of spread. Otherwise, you can have recidivism. And so you need to have somebody accountable. Moving on to the next slide, factors to facilitate spread. Again, I want to make the point, don't bother with one of these large projects unless you see this key. Let me talk about us, just so you say, well, okay, how did you make this a key strategic initiative? Well, we had a balanced scorecard measurement system, and we had safety as an indicator on there. IHI came along. They offered a collaborative called Quantum Leaps, And we decided that we would participate with this. It fit with ideas that we had that we were working on. In addition, as I said earlier, the Joint Commission was putting pressure on all hospitals to work more diligently on safety. You had by then to err as human. You had newspaper reports. You had outside forces working on organizations to get them to be more proactive in regards to safety. All of these things aligned in our organization to enable us work and make it a strategic indicator for us. It then became that measurement I showed you, ADEs per 1,000, then became a board-level indicator for the organization. Incentives aligned with safety goals. I have to say something. I think I'd say I have mixed reviews that we always clearly align all the incentives. I think that we have opportunities for improvement in our organization. When I've looked at Iowa Health System, I think they've done a better job, at least the executive level. And I'll give you an example of where I think we're doing a better job at the executive level of getting financial incentives aligned with also the safety goals. You're always going to need an executive sponsor on these projects. So fine, your CEO, he's on board, but that's not good enough because unless it's a small institution, he's probably not the executive sponsor. In this patient safety work that we're doing, there is an administrator who reports to the CEO who is responsible for these projects. He has that as part of his responsibility. And as I used the example earlier, the COO who had the Civil War, well, he recognized it. He recognized his responsibility there. It isn't so much that they have to spend a lot of time in regards to this, but that it is on their plate, that it's something they're thinking about, that it is a priority for them. And then lastly, when you think about factors to facilitate spread, you have to have a day-to-day manager, somebody who's figuring out how we're going to do this, where we're going to do it, how we're going to do it next, what unit, whatever we're going to spread it to. Somebody really has to be in there working on the situation. Somebody who has to really own the project. They have to wake up each day and think about this particular project. Now, let me turn to the next slide, OSF spread strategy. So here's what we did on this, our safety work that I talked about, the culture, the reconciliation, the dispensing, and the high-risk meds. What we actually did is we worked with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. And what I've come to recognize about our organization is that we all work best when we learn together, so that in our spread model, each facility, each hospital will develop its own successful site and spread the ideas within that facility. So it isn't like I take hospital A, develop a successful idea, and then work to spread that throughout all the other hospitals based upon the work of one hospital. It is really more as if six hospitals are simultaneously working on the same thing. However, the collaborative model helps speed up change for them. Because they're all working on the same ideas together, they learn from each other, and good ideas that are working for one hospital can spread to another, even though I always say all change is local, and it has to be adopted and has to be worked through in their organization, but it still does spread, and so the working together. So what we did is we actually took one hospital and had them work directly with the IHI collaborative, and then 2 months later, we launched our own internal collaborative. Most of you probably have worked with or are well aware of IHI collaboratives, but the essence of an IHI collaborative is you'll come having done some pre-work to a two-day learning session. You'll have done some measurements. You'll have some idea of the problem you have at hand. You'll come to a two-day learning session, and there'll be three of these, and there'll be several months in between. And the first learning session will be mostly didactic. You'll learn some new ideas, some changes that you need to work on. And then in the next few months, you'll go back home, and you'll mostly do testing, the ideas, finding out what's working for you and how to work on it the better. At the second learning session, you'll share with other teams. You'll still get some more information. And between the second and third learning session, you begin to start implementing your ideas and spreading your ideas. The focus on this talk today, obviously, is on spread. So what we did is we brought all six facilities together, even the one that had been to the IHI. I used them as some of the faculty. And we launched this in August 2001. We had our first learning session. And then all teams were given the similar directions. That's where I started out by saying My level, what I tell the teams is you need to go east, and east looks like culture change, reconciliation, failure modes, and high-risk medications. So all teams will work on that, but they're going to work on it at different rates. The teams formed at each site. They got the critical stakeholders that you're going to need for this project, which is they needed an administrator, they needed a pharmacist, they needed a physician, and they didn't need a nurse. It's the concept that you need to cover the waterfront of people you're going to need to influence back home. And so with medication safety, obviously, those would be the key stakeholders. Then, even though I told them east is the direction that they need to go, they have to refine their aims. They have to decide what they're going to do when it comes to a high-risk medication. So maybe they'll pick on insulin or heparin or whatever they thought was the problem. So they refine their aims. They make their local statement of what they want to work on. And then they choose their pilot site so that each facility then chooses its pilot site that they want to work on. Hopefully, if they're wise, they're going to choose the early adopters. They don't always do that, but that's their prerogative. And then the critical part is then they work through the change, find a satisfactory change that's working for them, it's robust, and then they have to spread it. And they spread it through what we talked about earlier. They spread it through the first of all, they have to spread it through the organization. Somebody has to have responsibility for spreading it. Administration has to be aligned with this. They knew it needed to know that it needs to go in this particular area. I never let them have, spread was never an option. Not to spread was never an option. They had to spread these ideas. Even though I say that, to be honest, they still are challenged and they aren't always successful. But they knew that there was a level of accountability at the corporate level that these ideas needed to be spread. And that is the essence of the work that we have done on patient safety in the initial change packet. But as we're going along, and we've been at this for several years now, new ideas are introduced. So I want to talk about this concept of crew resource management and use this as an example of failure and how we're making some corrective actions so you can see how things don't always go as smoothly as planned. So we turn to that side. And first of all, this concept called crew resource management. Let's just talk about what it is. I mean, it's a project and a process that the airlines have been using for since the early 80s about better team dynamics. Most systems fail, it's a human factor failure. 70% of your errors are related with human beings. And there are ways to strengthen the system, and crew resource management is part of this. And so I introduced the idea about a year and a half ago at one of our learning sessions, one of our two-day learning sessions, and began to get teams to start to think about this. Then approximately a year ago, in November, I introduced what I thought was a reasonable training package for them so that they could understand the idea. And so the focus of this whole training is on better team interaction. In the ER, the OR, wherever you're thinking about teams that are focused, that we need to have better interaction. But the idea, has not spread as I would have liked it to. First of all, think about the idea of the better ideas. I feel when I look backwards, I didn't define the ideas well. I didn't make it easily transferable or actionable, and I'll explain what I mean by that. I didn't make the case for it as well as I could have. I think whenever you're working on a change, you've got to do two things. You've got to create the present. You've got to help people see the tension in the present situation so they recognize we've got a problem in the present, and you've got to show them a future that would look different and better. I don't think I made the case as well as I should have in that. And I don't think I made the idea as simple or, again, as transferable as it could. I put down here the one exception was SBAR. And SBAR, let me just talk to you about that for a real brief moment. It's something that comes from the submarines. One way they're trained from the lowest to the highest ranking person is to use this concept called SBAR, which is describe the situation. Give the background, tell me your assessment, and tell me your recommendation. Make a long story short, in healthcare, we don't have the same mental models. This is very, very simplistic, but doctors are focused on cure, nurses are focused on care. And often when they communicate with each other, they don't have a shared mental model. This one idea was quick to teach, easy to spread, and it spread throughout the organization, so we explicitly use this when doctors and nurses communicate with each other. But other than that, the whole package idea that I wanted to spread hasn't spread. The target population, in the setup, you have to have a target population. and I don't know if I defined it well enough for them. We didn't have any internal successful sites, and there are some external sites that you can point to, but I don't think, we just didn't have that. And then you need strong physician involvement with this. And those are some of the things that I think that we need to work on. And obviously there's opportunity for us to work on, but these are some of the failure points. In the next slide about leadership, and I think this is probably the biggest failure point, I did not involve the key leadership group, which is at my learning sessions, my internal learning sessions for safety, you've got a physician, a nurse, you've got a pharmacist, you've got an executive. But the executive is not necessarily a nursing, the chief nursing officer. And they're the ones who are often responsible, have a great responsibility for education within your facilities. And so that I wasn't talking to the right people who had the authority and the ability at home to carry these ideas out. I recognized that somewhere along the process, and I have then, well, and I'll explain what I did, but I recognized that I didn't have nursing executives on board. I didn't have any outside forces pushing on this. This is a new concept for healthcare, and I didn't have any outside forces like I did with the generic concepts of patient safety. And I don't have the literature. I do have some, but I don't have a strong base of literature. And I didn't know it as well at the time when I first started launching this. So the next slide is the corrective actions that I took. You know, I believe the wind has switched and the tide has turned in this process for me, because what I did then is I said, you know, here's what we could do. Once again, this needs to be strategic. I need to have leadership commit to this. So the good news is, now, this is where I was saying we're doing well with alignment. This year, as of October of this year, this happens to be a strategic indicator, exactly an executive comp indicator. Every facility will develop a plan for implementation of crew resource management. So now I know I have the CEOs of each of the facilities on board with this. I've also lobbied with the nursing executives and made sure that they understood this. I've made the case for this a lot better. I understand it a lot more. And so I've been able to make a clear case that communication is a huge problem within the organizations, and this is a corrective solution for it. I've defined the population better. I've said we're going to work on this in the OR, the ED, ICU, and labor and delivery. And I've developed a better package of delivery of materials for them, but I've also made it more actionable. And what I mean by that is, instead of us all sitting around telling everyone that they should be good neighbors with each other, love each other, and hold hands and sing kumbaya, I've made this a more actionable item in the sense that I've told them, here, in surgery, I want you to do a surgical briefing. Take 2 minutes. Everybody share critical factors that you need to know before this operation starts. In the ER, we're going to teach this in regards to trauma codes or codes in general, how to have better communication, how to get better leadership organization. In labor and delivery, it's the same thing about briefings. And in the ICU, I've told them what we need to work on is the collaborative rounds, shared goals, that we need to put it on that way. Teach them in regard to a specific object that I want them to learn about, and then help them to learn the behavior changes or the ideas that they need to put around that. And then support pilots and make them more visible. And I do have one pilot that's running right now and another one to begin. And so this is the corrective action I've taken on this particular project. Now, you can ask me in a year how we're doing on it, but I feel that I have used the framework for SPREAD in regards to building a better system. So, Kurt, let me turn it back over to you and open it up for questions.
Thank you very much. If you have a question at this point for John or for Kevin in his opening remarks, all you have to do is press 1 on your phone's touch-tone keypad. That will put you into our question queue. When your turn comes up, I will call on you by the city and the first name of the registrant who registered from your particular location. If you're listening on a speakerphone and it has a mute or if you're looking on a speakerphone, it's best if you pick up your handset when you ask your question. We'll all be able to hear you much better that way. And a reminder, when you're replacing the handset, remember to press the speakerphone button so you don't disconnect. If you do disconnect, just dial back in, re-enter that PIN number, and you'll come immediately back into the program. So if you have a question, go ahead and press 1 now. If your question is answered while you're in line, pressing the pound key will take you out of the queue. I do have several questions that have come in at this point, and it looks like our first one will be to Dallas, Texas, then Easton, Maryland, and Seattle, Washington. So we'll start with Glenda's location in Dallas. The line is open. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for this presentation. We would like to review the SBAR, and specifically we missed what R stands for. Could you do that, please?
Sure. It's describe the situation, give the background, tell me your assessment, and give me your recommendation. Okay.
Did that take care of it, Dallas?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Next to Matthew's location in Easton, Maryland. The line is open. Go ahead.
Hi. This is Matthew Fitzgerald from Delmarva Foundation in Easton.
Could you speak up just a bit, Matthew? It's a little difficult to hear you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm curious, Dr. Whittington, how you developed the training material and if you'd be willing to share that with others on crew resource management.
Well, here's where collaboration comes in a big way, and most of the material has been given to me from Kaiser at this point in time. So I am hesitant to share it since I got it from them. Kaiser Permanente has been a real leader in this. So like I say, at this point in time, I'll have to refrain from just giving that away. Although if you contact me, maybe I could help you and get a contact out there.
Okay, that would be great. Do you have an email or something?
Yes. Do our email addresses listed anywhere, anybody? Well, let me just say it. It's fine. It's john.whittington@osfhealthcare.org.
Thank you.
John, this is Marie. If they're not in the material, then people can get any of the speakers' emails just by calling IHI, and they're in the IHI database, so we'd be happy to share them with everybody.
John, this is Kevin. Can I follow up on Matthew's?
Sure.
For the materials, I know you made that point about that the materials weren't actionable. Now, when you got the original materials, were they in the form that you wanted to, or from a spread standpoint, did you have to alter them once you saw that it wasn't working?
I've been altering them and trying to make them into a clearer package, and I've built some extra materials that I could share easily that are making the case for this, too. So they have good materials, but again, that's that concept that all change is local and that I can't just take Kaiser's and just, boom, deploy it. And so I tried to make it, again, more actionable for people and at least in our organization what I thought we could carry forward.
Great. I think that's a good point. Thank you.
John, this is Marie. Could you give an example of what you mean by actionable? Like maybe from the package wasn't actionable and you made it actionable.
Yeah, the specific thing, I guess, what I'm making actionable is I didn't tell them in the beginning, how would you, they had this material that they could train on, but what are you exactly training them on? Just that concept of everybody hold hands and sing songs? Or how about let's work on a task? And so I'm helping them to focus their training then on the specific tasks and teaching them communication with the concept of we're going to do a better job of communication, but here is how you're going to do it. You're going to work on a code. Here's the specific actions you're going to take in that code to make better communication. You're going to teach them the appropriate assertion so that they understood, oh, I see. We're going to make this actionable by not just teaching it generically, but we're going to teach it over a specific thing that's applicable to that area. So does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks.
All right, thanks. We'll go back to some questions at this point, and it appears that we have a question from Lisa's location in Bellevue, Washington. Bellevue, the line is open. Go ahead, please. Maybe a misnomer. Sorry about that. To Seattle, Washington, to Paula's location, the line is open. Seattle, go ahead with your question, please.
Go ahead. Just a second.
Yeah, this is Jeff West in Seattle. I have a question regarding the framework for SPREAD. You could speak to how that works with both a push and a pull way of spreading ideas and change ideas. Is that a clear enough question, or vague enough?
Well, I'll say something, maybe Kevin will too. In the generic sense about the push and the pull, first of all, you're always trying to make the case for whatever you're trying to make for it, so that this situation will be much more, it'll be much better when you go to this, and you're always trying to show them the problem that they have, that they're having at their local level with whatever it is. I mean, if it's this reconciliation, you try to get them to do some measurement so that they see the local problem they have and then they realize they've got to go to a new system because they're not going to get the job done with the old system. Is that kind of where you're going, or?
John, this is Gail. I have a comment that might help, at least from my perspective, and that is that I'm usually pushing until I get that first pilot group with success. And then once that success becomes obvious and visible, then someone else comes forward to volunteer to be next. And I feel that that's then pulled them to say, yes, we're going to try this.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good example, because what you'll do is if you find someone who's successful